on and leaves a comment or doesn't leave a comment, right? So if you think about that, serve first, right? Serve your reader's needs first, and maybe someday, maybe you'll sell them. Sell fourth, fifth, tenth, a hundredth. Mike only owns one shirt, so I don't think sorry, Mike, I should have consulted with you before I put that out.
So, I bought 190 square one.
Yeah, and that's true, actually. So, yeah, they're about $6, but they look good. And actually, this is Mike and I down in Chicago. This is Mike and I at the conference that we went to. And the reason that we were able to go is because we made that connection online first. Right, Mike is an amazing designer, and I hack on the blog, and we found a connection, something that we had in common. Right, it was the fact that we were both in Milwaukee, and we never met each other before. Right, how many people that are right around the corner from you don't you know? Right,
lots. I mean,
lots.
Yeah, a lot.
All of them. See?
So why? Why don't we know that? Right? Why don't we know the people that are next door to us?
Because we don't take the time. We're too busy with our laptops and our high-speed connections and our coffee shops.
Yeah. But why not invite them along?
I don't like them.
You don't like people?
Right. No, no.
Civilians.
I don't like some of my neighbors or something.
You know, not everyone's interested in connecting. You know, like, there's some people in my building who I know who I'll chat with, but there's some other people who are just like, you know, just like walk right past you, and it's like, okay, I'm not gonna, you know. I mean, there's a lot of people. I mean, we're kind of in a population dense area, so I mean, just for practical reasons.
Sure.
And you can't know everybody.
That's a good reason why, right? So how do we kind of cut through the crap? How do we get people talking about us, about our brand, right? How do we know who we want to talk to, right? How do we know who's important in our world? Well, a couple ways to get people talking is you can do goofy stuff like link to everybody that's in the city of Milwaukee that you know and see who responds, right? With Barcamp, I'm sure you had a search set up to find out anybody who mentioned it, right?
I browsed like hell and found everyone I could within like, you know, 50-100 mile radius and said like, hey, I noticed you have a blog and you're in whatever, Shorewood. There's this thing called Barcamp, so yeah, I just blanket it as much as I could.
Yeah.
And yeah, we got a good amount of people who some are probably here today just because I did that. So
yeah,
that worked pretty well.
So you reached out, you connected with them, right? Not everybody connects back. Some people are rude, right? Some people don't care. And some people you don't want to know, honestly, right? Because they're not in your niche. Maybe you can't help them or they can't help you, right? That's okay. It's not all about, you know, you to everybody, right? But you to them, one person, one at a time, right? Make the connection. Two cool things that I did that I got connected with. First thing was the 2,000 Bloggers Project online. 2,000 people decided they were going to link to 2,000 other people and set up this massive, whopping list. And it ended up being TechNoReady actually kind of threatened spanking everybody with that. But I got to meet some people that I wouldn't have otherwise met because I put up links to a boatload of people. Now, out of, I think there was 1,950 that ended up in the list, and not everybody did I connect with, right? But I put it out there. Hey, I'm open for business, if you will. Connect to me if you're interested. And I followed people who were talking about me, right? We talked earlier about knowing more and finding out who is connected to me, who's linking to me, who's talking about me, who's talking about my brand. So we did that, and that was a lot of fun. It was very successful. I probably made 20 or 30 new friends out of 1,950 that I could have made. But 20 or 30 people, right, added to your network, 20 or 30 people that you can do business with, 20 or 30 people you can collaborate with, right, that's better than zero, better than walking past a person sneering at you on the elevator, right, and stopping to talk to them. So finding some commonality. And then one other fun thing was the Z list. Has anybody heard? Everybody knows what the A list is, right? All the cool cats, right? Paris Hilton and Britney Spears and, right?
None of us are on that list.
I thought you meant the blogging A list.
Oh, the blog. Thank you. See, Pete's here for me. That's why Pete's here. Pete's the only
you can
one
pay me later.
Because he's blogged so long.
He is, yeah. Pete's been blogging before the internet. He was on BBS.
That's not true. Okay. It will be 10 years in August.
10 years, so flip that upside down and you get the Z list, right? Those of us that were connected to nobody. Initially, when I got on the Z list, I think I had 100 people maybe that linked back to me, maybe 50, and many of which were accidental, I think, that linked back to me, maybe didn't remove the nofollow tag from their stuff. So I got on this goofy list, started out with like 40 people. It was all nobody I knew. Somebody, I think, put my name in there as a lark, and 40 people, and then I moved from 40 to 60 people, and from 60 to 80 people, and it kept growing, and again, I met 20 people that I can connect with, that I can help out, that can help me out. Now, tell me who you are. Who are you? Do you know who you are? Do you know your brand? What's important to you? Why do you do what you do? If you think about that, anybody want to take a share who they are, why they do what they do? Everybody want to be shy?
Because I can't not do it.
Because you can't not do
yes. It's the, for instance, you know, I've heard this from creative people, you know, they say like, you know, why do you spend all your time like writing music? It's like, I can't not do it. It's like, if I don't do it, it makes myself crazy. It's either a release, it's a creative outlet, whatever, but I've heard that some people, it's like, I do these things because I can't not do them. So, that's my answer.
Or you can say that it's natural, it's your natural inclination.
Yeah, it's like you're compelled to do it, and it's holding it back just feels kind of wrong or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent answer. It's almost a, not necessarily an obsession, but it's very close to that, where I've just been doing, following online information. I started in May 1992, and I can't stop. I just keep doing it, and I keep organizing information online. Maybe it's something, you know, my brain chemistry that makes me just keep doing this, but I, like Pete said, I can't, even if I financially wouldn't ever have to do it again, I still would do it, even if I didn't get paid for it.
Yeah. Cool. Anybody else?
Gives me an opportunity to learn more things. Yeah, I'm an education junkie.
Cool.
I like learning.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I think you can refine too. That's the thing I found in creative work is if I look back 5-10 years, I can see where I've come to now, and I've learned things from years like age 6. Learn from what I've done before, but as you continue to do it, you start improving and getting better, and you sort of evolve to the next level.
So you become a better you, almost, right? A super you, feel, right? You've got more specialty and less maybe broadness, right? You find your niche, you find what you're passionate about, and maybe you are passionate about everything, but maybe you're just an inch thick and you're just that point arrow, right? Being off in the distance, if you will. So if you tell me who you are, right, and I tell you who I am, maybe we have something in common, right? Find out we go to the same church, we live in the same city, we hang out at the same coffee shop, maybe we both like honey lattes from Altera, maybe we both have Dell books, maybe we both have Macs, right? But if you have to tell me who you are, and I tell you who I am, then we can see, right? We can see the face behind who we are and really where that connection lies. So deepening that relationship, right? Once we found out what we have in common, we can grow the relationship a little bit and deepen that passion. If we both love our Dells and we talk about that, and that's our big connection point, and when we get the next computer because we're friends and we get a new Dell together, we continue that conversation. Right, we deepen it up, we do more, we grow more together. So three people that I was able to connect with in the last 12 months or so are, because I published a book in the last year, I like to connect with authors. I like to connect with people who help others improve their lives, who share what they know, and I found out Mike's got a book about Linux. So that's cool. So that's a connection for Mike and I. These are three authors that I got to meet. Two of them I met only over the phone. Bob and Dick I met over the phone. We interviewed each other. We kind of talked about each other. We shared some laughs. I found out Dick is a big baseball fan, just like me. In fact, when he wrote our article, he talked about how he wanted to play center field for the Phillies and he could never hit a fastball, and I was the first person to unmask that of him. Huh, okay, that's kind of cool, right? That's a connection. I'm a big baseball fan too, so I found that out. Bob Prosen is a guy who writes a lot of business books. He's been the CEO of a couple of corporations and has won numerous awards for his writing. So Bob and I's connection was, I want to be more like Bob. I want to win awards for my writing. I want to do better things with my writing. Put it out in different formats. He's at the airport. You know, that's the best way to sell books, is to get your book at the airport, because people buy books that they would never buy anytime else because they're captive at the airport. And usually...
Captive.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Captive at the airport.
I was 4 hours on the runway yesterday. I wanted to kill myself. I wish I had a book.
There you go.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you do pay a premium to be at the airport. But you sell more books there than anywhere. So I talked to Bob. He actually shared some of his secrets with me. And a lot of them revolve around just getting the right people behind you, right? Again, getting back to the people aspect. Who do you know? And who knows you? And the last person, actually, I'm very honored to say is Lisa Hanneberg. And she'll be in Milwaukee Saturday. She's from Seattle. She is taking a trip across the country on her motorcycle. Lisa is all about relationships. She planned her whole trip this year, the year of the breakthrough for her book, 2 weeks to a breakthrough, around all of her friends that she met online so that she can travel and come visit every one of them. She's taking a Honda Roadster around the country, and of course I had to ask, so why not a Harley? You're coming to Milwaukee, right? But she's taking a trip all the way across the country on a motorcycle to meet the people behind the sites she reads, behind her friends, that many of which she's never met in person. I got to meet Lisa when I was in Seattle last time because my brother lives out there. But many have never met Lisa before, and we were charged with finding venues that could host Lisa, that could put her up and put her in front of a bunch of people. Now, we're fortunate here in Milwaukee. I don't know if you know this or not, but we've got the best online bookstore for just business books in the country. Does anybody know who that is?
800 CEO Read.
800 CEO Read. Ring a ding ding. Well done, Pete. 800 CEO Read does in bubble wrap, but they're only online. So they're, though, the online affiliate of Schwartz Books.
They are?
Yeah. They're sister companies. Mm-hmm. Most people don't know that.
I know it.
Yeah, Pete knows everything. So we will not ask Peter.
I knew it because they were a sponsor of Barcamp, so I talked to them at that time.
Cool.
We're just going to call you Google for now.
Yeah. Pete Google. Yeah.
Trademark for that. I'll get sued.
All right. Google Pete?
I don't know.
All right. Okay. But Lisa is coming because of Schwartz Books, because she's also met Todd and Jack. She hasn't met Ryan yet, but I think she's afraid to. So okay. You met him, Bubble Boy?
I have only met a woman, I don't remember her name.
Kate,
that's it, yeah. See, I'm no good at this, can't remember names.
She will be at the Schwartz in Brooklyn. 115-600, wasn't
doing. So that's
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get an autographed copy of her book if you don't. So, it's at 3:00. So, but I'm honored because Lisa's coming to Milwaukee to come visit with me. And, of course, whoever else is here, I feel like it's just me, right? You know, we're transacting a little me-to-you business, Lisa and I, right? So I got to know Lisa, again, because of her website. All these people, you humanize the experience for yourselves, and you realize that we power together, right? We power. All of us, collectively, are more than just me. Right? It might be me to you business, but ultimately, if you can partner with people who will tell your story for you, who can help talk about your brand, who can help talk about your website, your business, or just you, Because ultimately, you are your brand. You can be a relationship geek. Ultimately, that's what we want to do, right? We want to do more of what we love and less of what we don't. So in conclusion, a few points for you. Remember, business solve, me to you, not B2B. Listen, always ask questions, right? You need to ask some questions, get deep, find out what people are interested in, what do they do? Answer their questions, right? Hopefully there's some dialogue, not just soliloquy. Thank you, and monologue, unilogue, when did I come up with that, huh? I won't use that again. Knowing more, right, about who we are, who they are, sharing more, right, giving it back, sometimes personal stuff, sometimes professional stuff, whatever, sharing more, serving first and selling fourth, or fifth, or tenth, or never, and growing more together. But it's not over. The last step, the most important step, is continuing the conversation. Because after tonight, right, if we never talk again, and we had our Me to You business, and I buy your widget, and never come back, what do we have? One transaction, business to business. I don't talk about you, you don't talk about me. We're just passing through. Maybe smile at each other, maybe we don't growl, but maybe we don't help each other as much as we could. So being a relationship geek is all about continuing that conversation, taking it home, right? Taking it outside of here, helping each other, whatever that brand is. I can tell you that Pete and Mike are guys that I recommend all the time. You guys, I'm so stoked that you guys are going to be at that TMJ thing tomorrow. That is so cool. Sean Hackbarth asked me, he said, who do you know that are business bloggers? So I said, Mike and Pete and Jason Kotecki. And Mike and Pete and Jason Kotecki are on the panel. I don't know.
I'm a business blogger.
That's kind of cool. Yeah, business blog. Sorry, Pete. It's kind of
sorry.
I don't know what else to call you, man.
Long term,
yeah. Season.
Continuous.
Continuous.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Seinfeld. Yeah. I should have stopped at 90.
Blog about nothing.
Yeah. But it's everything, right? It's about the conversation.
We should have picked him. He's the guy who gets business connections like hell from it.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
you share your information.
Yeah.
We'll talk about
that. You're not sharing
right.
It.
I ran sure. Business.
You need to talk to him.
We'll talk. So continue that conversation. All right. So any questions, comments?
Do you do this full time? Do you earn your money from like speaking and then your book revenue?
Not yet.
What is your main work?
I deal drugs. It's outside the
street pharmaceuticals.
I do look familiar.
Yes. Yeah.
I heard you work at a help desk or something.
You
like
heard
that.
Right. Yes, okay. I'm a VP of IT at Robert W. Baird.
Do you hope to be able to make this full time?
Yeah, definitely.
Like I can talk to you about that because that's what I did.
Cool.
Is went from being a freelance writer to chief instructor to full time web publisher. It just.
Cool.
I don't have my day job is my
district
life. Publisher. Yeah, cool. It's my life, actually.
Awesome. I'd love to talk to you. Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
I have some questions.
Pete!
Phil, you seem to always be so damn positive.
Yes.
That's just your nature, I guess. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But I just... It's like I feel like do you get sad or depressed or angry?
Yeah,
sure. I just feel so cynical compared to you. Like
why are you comparing yourself to me instead of comparing yourself to you?
I don't know how to do that. Well, no, whenever I read your site, I'm like, man, he's so up, you know? Even when you had a little issue with a pizza delivery.
Yeah.
You like describe the whole story, and then at the end, it's like, how can they make it great? You know, it's like let's turn it around. Instead of just being pissed and writing a thing, I'm pissed. It's like, here's all my complaints. How'd they do wrong? What can they do better in the future? How can they make it great? And
yeah.
He twisted it.
Like it. Life is twisted, man.
I guess so.
Right? It's up to you.
I guess. I think I just became cynical at a young age. And
yeah.
I just, you know.
Would you like some drugs, Pete?
I can't say because I'm recording this.
Eventually,
but,
you'd be so cynical that you'd become cheerful.
Right. It'll just twist back.
It could be. Yeah, it does actually go in.
Twist.
Wait. Oh, jeez. Yeah. Okay.
Was there a question there?
Well, I asked you if you get angry or sad.
Yeah.
Or do you ever write about this thing? Do you ever have a post on your site that's just kind of down or
one,
low? And, you know.
One kind of rant, yeah, I talked about in Telecontact. They kind of posed me on my newsletter.
Okay.
They got blacklisted by Spam House a year and a half ago and didn't inform any of their clients until I called them out on it on my blog. So...
All right.
And then still didn't put it on their public site. You had to be logged in to see it.
No.
So I talk about that, but very rarely, though. I mean, there's enough negativity out there without me talking about it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, really, why feed that? I mean...
I don't feel like I feed it or try to.
No, I'm not saying you.
What I'm saying is I just feel like I can't be up and positive all the time because... I tend to be critical of something, so it's not like I feel like I'm just bitching and complaining all the time.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes I feel like, I can't see a positive in this. I don't know how to spin it, maybe, but...
Just reframe it. Think about what is better.
Reframe it.
Or maybe that's part of your brand. That
there you go.
Yeah.
That you are critical.
Cynical, so thinking
you're positive about some things, though.
Sure.
You're very enthusiastic about bar games, for example. I've seen it in you. Yeah. Very enthusiastic about that. Very positive.
My other question is...
Yeah.
You have so many contacts.
Yeah.
But how many of those people do you like really know or feel like you know?
Good question, actually.
Good enough.
I weeded a lot of them out, actually.
Okay.
I used to, when LinkedIn started, I got a lot of people who, you know, I mean, when it first started, you could link to anybody.
Yeah.
Right? And actually, I think it's the LinkedIn Power Forum. Actually, if you put your email address in there and you, in your name, and then you link on there and you put that in your forum, then people can connect to you automatically. I mean, that's how these people are going from, like, no contacts to, like, 8,000 contacts.
But what's the value in it, really?
Well, the value, if you're a recruiter, is that you can get inside a company, and anyone that you can touch, you can connect with.
Okay.
So getting back, I guess, to your question, though, how many do I feel I know? I would say out of 500, I think, let's say I have 500 connections. I probably know... at least 80% of those people, and of course, find out with them somewhat frequently. I would say that I probably know probably 100 of them that I could count on. I could pick up the phone and talk to them, that I know them more than just a casual acquaintance, and probably 50 that I know really, really well that I would, you know, that I would call at 3 in the morning if something went wrong.
Okay.
You know, but I think the interesting thing for me, anyway, about kind of building, because like I said, I'm not building to build. I'm building to help.
Yeah.
And hopefully, ultimately, one day to help me, certainly.
Right, right.
But really, you know, I think that the value in that is that, A, I'm connected with everybody in my company where I work. So that's 120, 130 people.
Was it some of that, though, the nature of what your job is, I would think, wouldn't it be?
I don't know. Some of it, I guess, the way I do my job, sure, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I feel my job is to be the ambassador for the company. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, when I worked in a large faceless corporation, for 2 years in a row, I said they had these awards ceremony at the end of the year. And for 2 years, it was, you know, the like, help desk guy, the guy who hits everybody in the company at some point during the year, was, like, you know, the outstanding award of achievement. You know, it's like, woo, you go crazy for it. Well, everyone knows that guy.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting back in the corner, you know, with a wall up against me in a conference room there, no one, but not that I care. But I'm just saying, like, it seems like you'd probably be a lot more help. Or there's probably people in the company who know only a handful of people you would think, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think in any company, though, or any walk of life, right? I mean, even online, a lot of people don't even open their comments up. Right,
sure.
they don't want to connect.
Yeah.
Right, so I think it's all about desire. Right, if you want to connect to information or people, you can. If you don't, then don't. Right. You know, but yeah, for me though, I actually had a challenge at the beginning of the year, my 2,000 bloggers challenge. I wanted 2,000, get to 2,000 web other blogs that link back to me to really crank up the technicality rate. Because I actually pulled that down because I realized, as you said, you can't know everybody. Right. 2,000 people. I mean. Yeah, how many are you going to know?
Yeah, I mean, even at, like, at Barkham Madison, I mean, there are people there who I just, you know, were there for however long. I just didn't get a chance to talk to well enough to know more than that's that guy's name.
Yeah.
Or he's, hey, that guy's into Linux, and, you know.
That's why you got to continue the conversation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Take it home, right? Take it back. Find out the comments point.
Right.
What would you say to someone who's concerned about the time investment? Because obviously there's got to be a time investment in order to reach out and to maintain all these relationships.
Sure.
And to keep an eye on, like, for instance, I'll use like Google Blog Search, other utilities, do a search on my name or my website, and then I have RSS feeds. But as they pop up, I've got to make that initiative to go to the website and leave a comment and say, thanks for mentioning me or whatever. Now, is there, what would you say to someone who's concerned about sort of this investment of time that they realize or they think they may have to invest?
Well, it is an investment, I think, first of all. That's the first most important thing to realize, is that it is an investment. It may not cost you money, but time is money, right? So chunk your time down. I mean, I don't spend all day, every day going out. In fact, I've realized that, you know, if I am in a big Z list of things now, I don't always take part. You know, I think it's somewhat a flywheel-like, right? If you push a flywheel, at first it's really hard to push. You know, it's really heavy, might be a couple tons. But once you get it moving, you know, you kind of attract people that you want to be with, and recognize that even if you just take just a moment to go out and see what it was they said, I mean, if they take the time to really mention me in an article and say how much they enjoyed a post, well, yeah, I mean, that's value. Right, that's worth the investment. But if it's just here's a list of 1,000 people and Phil's one of them, well, probably not. So I think the key is to find out, you know, what's your goal, right? Start at the end. What is your goal? Is your goal to get 2,000 bloggers like mine was? Well, if that's your goal, then you have to invest the time. You have to, because people don't link back for nothing. Right? I mean, I'm not saying they want you to send them $10, although if you send me $10, I will link to you. I'm not that way, you know. But I mean, realistically, right? I mean, it's not about that, but we're all transacting at some level, whether it's time or energy or just, hey, I just linked to you because I want to know you. Please come visit me, right? I mean, and it all depends the level at which they connected with you. I mean, if they just post and then they never post about you again, and maybe you don't do anything, but if they send you an email, right? Why not take the time to say, hey, thanks a lot, you know, or whatever, you know, or a great post or something like that. You know, it's all about the investment that you want to make, and it can be as small as you want, right? 30 minutes a week or 2 minutes a week or as big as you want. I mean, it can be all-consuming. Just set your limits. Think about what you really want. Is that the answer?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that it's worth the investment. I mean, I have to make decisions about what stuff I'm going to do. If the search is running and someone mentions a post or something, and it's relevant, I'll go, I was leaving a comment to say thank you. I'll try to respond to emails as quickly as possible.
Yeah, relevancy, I think, is really important, right?
Yeah.
Good point.
What do you think about, are you familiar with the tipping point?
Absolutely.
So, do you think it's the connector maven salesman theory is true, and do you think you fit into that connector category?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I prefer. I'm actually a bigger fan of Seth Godin. I'd say I'm a sneezer.
Okay.
If you read any Seth, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think you know, Gladwell's good, but Gladwell's a little too academic for most of us to understand. I think if we talk about Godin, though, he talks about sneezing, right? We share what we know and what we're passionate about, and we inject it like a virus across everybody and everything that we know, good or bad, right? I mean, Pete talked about my pizza thing. You know what? Google Papa John's customer service, I'm top 10 now because tons of people sneezed about it besides me, right? It went all over. Well, why is that? Why does that happen? Why is that important? I think because good or bad ideas spread, right? If they're powerful ideas, right? Like Pete said, you know, taking a crappy story and making it a happy one, people are like, what? They're just like Pete. A lot of people are like, are you kidding me? I was expecting you to like slam down the phone and go down there and punch this guy out. I'm like, okay, right? But think about the best books you read, right? Twist the story at the end. That's what's interesting, right? Not, if I'd have gone down there and beat up the the pizza guy, that probably would have been funny for about 10 seconds.
I think it's funny now.
You think it's funny?
It is funny. All right,
your time's up, Pete. No, but really, though, right? I mean, you would have expected that, right? But if you don't expect something and you sneeze about an idea, I think it's important. And, yeah, connecting to people, really, again, I don't know, life is all about trends. You know, the meet you, right? One-on-one. So, yeah, I think it's connecting, sales, whatever you want to call it.
And see, even though ultimately it was a bad experience, a bad thing, you had a good story out of it.
I did.
Just like you and your little airport out of it.
Yeah, that's a great story.
That's the thing. I think horrible happens to that, let's make a great story.
I'm going to blog about it, right?
Sure.
And I think that's how I can be so dang happy, is because I realize I'm going to write about it, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
And then he laughs, you're so screwed, airport security guard.
Yeah. You should ask him for a picture when he's holding your shoes.
Oh, believe me, my camera was in so many pieces.
Oh, I see.
I was like, new toy, don't destroy it.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Cool.
Whatever happened with that, did Papa John's ever...
I still haven't talked. That was Valentine's Day. They still haven't talked to me.
Well, besides just blogging about it, I mean, yeah.
What happened first?
For those who missed it, all right. Valentine's Day, me being the hopeless romantic that I am, told my wife, whatever you want, we're going to do for Valentine's Day. Okay? So I got home at 5:30, and my wife was laying on the couch in pain and said, hey, will you order pizza? Just stay home. Just stay next to me. We'll watch a movie. We'll just relax. We'll kick back. So, of course, I will do whatever you say, dear. It's your day. No problem. So I go. I didn't even call. I didn't want to disrupt her. I went in line real quietly, papajohns.com. Ooh, okay. How's that sound? Whatever you want. Okay. Pizza. Okay. Even give the guy a $3 tip. 6 o'clock. 36 to 42 minutes was the promised time. At 7 o'clock, an hour later, no pizza. Pick up the phone. Call. The guy answered the phone. Hello? That was it. Hello. I called a place of business, and I get a, hello? Okay. All right. Yeah, is this Papa John's?
Yep.
Wow. Okay. This is really interesting. Okay. Great. I'm calling about my pizza.
Yep.
Okay. Great. You're looking for a name? What do you got?
Uh-huh.
All right. Okay. Here's my name. Gerbyshack. G-E-R-B-Y. The guy goes, sets the phone on. Nothing. I'm like, okay. Like 5 minutes later, he picks up the phone.
Yeah, man. Our driver's car broke down, and he's got your pizza.
I'm talking to my guy.
No.
Okay, great. Okay, he's got my pizza. Fantastic. What are you going to do? Nothing.
Oh.
No response. Now it's 20 after 7. I'm like, okay, are you going to deliver? Dude, didn't you hear? The pizza guy's got your pizza, and his car is broke down. Okay, great. Can I talk to a manager? Okay, now my ear hurts. Great! So, female voice, hello? Ah, you work together. I understand. We have got pizza. Okay, great. I'm guessing your guy didn't tell you anything about my story, so I'm wondering about my pizza. Gerbyshack. G-E-R. Yep.
Wow.
It's a clapper.
So 10 minutes go by, and she goes, hey, your pizza's here. Oh, okay, great. So are you going to deliver it? Sir, do you know that our pizza driver is broken down, and we don't have any drivers? Okay, I know that. Fantastic. So what? What are you going to do?
Long.
I'm like, okay, great. How about this? How about you refund my money? Okay. Oh, I see you paid with credit card. I can't do that.
Because I can give you cash on the phone.
Right, yeah. Okay, you can do that. Okay, fine. How about Papa John's bucks? How about you just refund my money, give me a gift card, right? Oh, I can't do that. That would make my till short. Now it's 8:15. I'm an hour and 15 minutes past when I first called. I'm not kidding. 75 minutes on the phone with these knuckleheads. And she goes, what would you like us to do? Again, I said, well, here's what I would have liked you to do. You know, I manage a customer service help desk, and I would like you to start calling your clients back. Tell them that you've got no driver. Let them know that they can come in and pick up their pizza. Something, right? Sir, that's a great idea. Sir, I'm going to have to let you go. I'm going to start calling customer service. No! Where's my pizza? Right? I want my pizza! My pizza! Oh, well, it's here. Okay, I'm going to come back. It's 8:30. My wife is like, well, I'm coming with you. It's Valentine's Day. I order pizza at 6 o'clock. It's 8:30. We stop, make just a quick pit stop, walk into the pizza place. Hi, I'm Mr. Gerdeshack. I'm here for my pizza. Okay, hang on. Your pizza! Oh, sir, our driver took your pizza. Is there anybody at your house? Kidding me? Is there anybody at my house? This is almost 3 hours later. Is there anybody in my house? You got pizza? No, there's nobody at my house. Oh, well, the driver will be back in half an hour with your pizza. Really? Wow, okay. How about this? I'm going to fix your problem. Put my pizza on my porch, and I'll be there. Now, I don't know if you remember Valentine's Day this year, but it was snowing. Bad. We have about 3 inches of snow on our porch. So I pulled up, and I swear the driver, he must have seen me coming because he was gone. I'm surprised he didn't run into my neighbor's mailbox. He took off like a shot. So I pull up, and I was a little concerned because, you see, none of the snow was melted from my pizza.
Oh, boy.
It's interesting. Maybe it's really well heat sealed, right?
Maybe.
Oh, no. No. Walk in the house, set the pizza down. My wife is all excited about pizza. Flips open the box and says, this is the pizza we ordered at 6 o'clock, and it's about 8 inches big. And it's a grease bomb.
It's frozen.
And it's frozen solid. Along with our 3-inch little thing of cinnamon sticks. Valentine's Day. So, I wrote about it on my blog, and sent it out to some of my customer service blogger friends, and said, hey, just want you to read this story, and like, Pete, I got a couple of them like, are you nuts? You didn't thrash those guys? I said, no. What can we learn from this? How can we do this better? I manage a customer service help desk, right? My job every day is to take crappy situations, they get blown up and escalated to me, and make them better. So how do we make it better, right? So I wrote a little series about it, you know, greeting, right? Answering phone with hello, probably not the most effective greeting, right? Responding to clients' needs. Right, what do they need? What do they want? Offering some solutions yourself instead of waiting for your customer to answer. Right? Having a little empathy for them. I'm sorry I jacked up your pizza. Explain some solutions. Ask them if it's okay, right? I wasn't okay with a 3.5-hour-old pizza. That wasn't okay with me. So how about offer something else? Let's make another pizza. Let's do something. And then, you know, how about a thank you? Sir, I'm really sorry, but thanks for your patience. Sincerely said, even after 3 hours, I mean, maybe cut them a little slack. You know, then follow up right after the fact, make sure that it's good to go. I mean, I still haven't heard from those jokers, and it's 4 months later. 4 months to fix a problem, right? So, did you Google Papa John's in customer service?
Papa John's sucks.
No, I won't say. No, I don't have socks. No.
No, he's too positive.
No, customer service, man. Papa John's customer service.
It seems like they needed some more agility in problem solving. What I mean is, the manager knowing, like you said, as soon as they know they don't have an operational car for the driver, they needed to start thinking immediately. The manager jumped in her car, get those number pizzas 10. To the customers. If necessary, shut down the operation.
Stop taking orders.
Stop taking orders if you can't handle it.
Yep.
But right away, as soon as you know there's a problem, start agile problem solving.
Yeah.
That's what, how I would term it.
Like, I think she was in power. They don't like people.
It's just like the car doesn't work, so they won't get their pizza, so let's just sit here.
It's almost mentally like they were stuck.
Yeah,
the structure, and like there was no, they were not given any option, like make something happen. It was like, this is the rules, and they got to the end of the rules, and like, okay, now what do we do?
Yeah.
Well, I've worked with people who, they have this procedure, and when they get stuck, they have no clue, they don't know what to do. And they typically rely on people like me or us or whatever to say, like, look at it this way, do it this way, here's your options, you know, here's how we can fix this, because there are people who just, I don't know, they have like this kind of tunnel vision. It's like, we do this and this and this and that. Oh no, this is broke. Well, we can't go any further. There's no way around, there's no way, you know.
Or else it's people who are, you're all creative in your fields and you probably have good jobs, but when you're in a company where there's very low morale, it's almost like, I worked in a Subway one summer in college, and some of the people I worked with, they didn't want people to come in. Like, they would put things away.
Well, they get paid either way, right? I mean...
Well, it's like they didn't...
Right?
Yeah, they get paid either way.
Yeah.
They didn't want...
The customers were bothersome.
Yes, the customers were bothersome to them, just hanging out. They didn't want customers. So I think, honestly, I think it's that they didn't care. I don't think they were... It doesn't sound like these people were following procedures. I mean, I find it hard to believe that anyone would be that stupid. I think it's more like they don't care, because they're going to get paid minimum wage either way, and this way they get to sit around and they don't have to make more pizzas. You know?
Yeah. FDs.
Did the business writer write about this particular thing, how to kill a coffee shop? He talked about a very good experience he had at a coffee shop, and then the workers in that coffee shop started doing it. And they started closing early, so he went in there like a half hour before it closed, and they refused to make him coffee because they had already cleaned out everything, washed it, and put it away. And
so I stopped going to places in the summer.
Yeah, you stopped going to them, and the owner wonders why the business failed.
Well, if the owner's bad to the employees aren't going to want to do that.
So it's an ecosystem.
Yeah. Well, yes.
I work in tech support, and my job is to be yelled at by people all day long, and I don't know if my company doesn't treat me very well, but, like, nice to people is like this much of a help in them yelling at me less.
Really?
So
oh,
good.
Oh gosh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, kill them with kindness.
No, I mean, you really think it's only this much help though?
Yes.
Really?
But how much help is it for you though? For like one person?
Yeah, like one less person yells at me, that could make my day better.
But you also know that you did the right thing, and that's their problem. It's not you.
Did they give you any training in how to deal with the problems?
No.
Really?
Yes.
Do you want a new job?
Yes.
Talk to me afterwards. We'll find a new job. I'm president of the HEI chapter in Milwaukee, so I'll take care of it.
Well, Phil, my alternate story to that is,
yes.
I went to Culver's with my kids, and... when you buy kids meal, you get a little coupon.
Yeah.
You save them up.
Scoopy bucks.
You trade them in for whatever. So my older daughter saved up enough, and she went in, and she wanted a T-shirt. And they had one on the wall, and she said, I want to get a shirt. And so, what size do you want? And they go in back for a while. They come back. We don't have any right now. I'm sorry. Okay. So we came back, like, 2 weeks later. She brings them again. Kids, really excited. First, she wants to order, like, oh, can I have the lemon ice smoothie? It's like, get whatever you want. And they go away. And they come back and like, we're out of those. It's like two strikes. And then she says, and there's no shirt on the wall anymore. And she says, do you have any shirts now? And she has her little coupons. They're like, oh, let me go check. They come back. And they're like, we don't have any shirts. So I'm like, three strikes. This kid, she can't win. You know? So I said, we're gonna go home and complain. Because that's what I do.
Yep.
So we go home. So we go home. We go to their website. I said, here's the form. Start filling it out. She fills it all out. Submit. She can't submit it.
Oh,
and I'm like, oh, God. So what do? I try to submit it. I try to, like, disable JavaScript. Everything doesn't work. So I copy what she wrote, and I composed an email and just randomly tried to find Culver's email addresses, you know, like info and sales, whatever, and wrote her complaint and added in mine. And I said, you know, she's been trying to get a shirt. She's very excited. She's gone through times. They didn't have responded. So I got a email back, and this was like a Friday. I got an email back Monday morning from someone saying, like, what size shirt does she wear? You know, and, you know, very excited this happened. You know, make sure you tell, you know, which location was it and what size did she wear. So I haven't got a shirt yet, but good customer service,
yeah.
Which makes all the difference.
Yeah, they certainly made it a barrier to get to that customer service.
And I said, you know, we did try to, you know, submit the form online. I'll just like, the form doesn't work in Safari or Firefox. You might want to check that out.
And
she
like
said,
Safari?
Well, I tried Firefox first. And I'm like, it doesn't work. And she said, like, oh, you know, we'll have our tech people look at that, and hopefully they can fix it. So, you know.
So what is a Firefox?
Well, hopefully you forward it on to someone who knows what that is.
Did you blog about this?
I didn't.
You should. You still
are?
Yeah,
busy working.
Yeah. I had a similar experience today with my mortgage company. We have $6,800 difference between our flood coverage and our home coverage. And this has been going on for a year and a half, and they've not told me yet why they keep sending me these letters every month. So every month they send me a letter, every month I call my insurance agent, and every month he faxes them an updated policy. And every month they refund my money, and then every month, the next month, they charge me again. And they send me the same form letter, month after month after month. So I called today. I was having my insurance agent handle it, because they're open to, like, you know, 4:30. That's real convenient for me, right, who works till 5, whatever. So I called up, and I'm like, okay, so... You know, what can I do? Well, hold on, but I fixed the problem, though. See, here's what I did, is I talked to the girl. Absolutely. I try to help. You know, so what I did is I talked to the girl. I'm like, you know, this is ridiculous. This form letter is terrible. She goes, yeah, well, we've sent it up the line. I mean, talk about lack of empowerment. And this is a Fortune 100 company that has my mortgage. Okay? So I'm like, you know, I want to write to the CEO. She gives the person, she is not empowered enough to even give me the CEO's name of her division. So I go to their corporate website, I'm like, is it this guy? She's like, well, sir, I can't confirm that, but that sounds like the right guy.
If I can Google it and find it, you can tell me.
Yeah. So I went to their corporate website, and she gave me their address first, and I pulled it up, and I'm like, okay, is it this guy? You're in this location? She's like, that may be it, sir. Okay, so I'm going to send this joker a letter because they, you know, I had no idea. We've had our house now the whole year. He's been screwing us around with this stuff. It's like, what is going on? I mean, and lack of empowerment and apathy, I mean, that's so rampant. You know, how much do we all lose because of that, right? Because no longer is it that me to you business. Right now it's me to this corporation that doesn't care because they don't get it. You know?
Well, it's not necessarily her. I mean, she has job security to consider.
Oh.
And there's a lot of people who, like, you know, they're in fear in their jobs.
Oh,
and they
yeah,
can't
yeah.
do what they really want
yeah.
to.
And especially at Fortune 100 companies. The,
yeah.
The lines of responsibility are so
straitjacket. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so I'm going to fix it. I'm gonna send the CEO a letter. And if he doesn't respond, I'll send the CEO of the whole company a letter. So, in fact, I might copy him in. You know, it's just... It's ridiculous, though, how removed they get from fixing a problem, right? I mean, really, you should empower that right at the front line, right? It should be a form letter that they should be able to go in and edit. I mean, you work tech support. How hard is it to edit stuff in Word? This is not hard, right?
I can't do it.
Well,
I can't use Word.
Again, Pete,
Word hates me.
Yeah. So, or Open Office or whatever,
I can do that.
Whatever Notepad, whatever you're using these days for your high-powered word processing. Yeah. So, but yeah, to push that down and power at the base instead of at the peak, you know. John,
how much of your passion for this customer service is part of your relationship before? This really comes up very strongly when you get there. It's a very animated part of your presentation.
Probably half. Maybe 30 to 50%, depending.
How is that coming out in your work, and is your book about that primarily?
Yeah, my next book, yeah, I'm working on that. I actually submitted an article to Support World about writing a better email that's kind of around the principles of customer service, see how that flows. But yeah, absolutely, I've done a couple keynotes on that, mm-hmm. on customer service. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the passion, and the also the humor really comes out. It really comes out.
Thanks.
Why helped?
Yeah. You're a good straight man.
You should
man.
Pay me to sit on the side.
Yeah. You travel with me, Pete? You can carry my bags.
Thanks.
Good. Other questions, comments, feedback? What's that? You know, I have the book in the car, but I'll give you all my business card if you don't want that. Because I'd rather connect with you than I would sell you my book. So that's the truth.
So you'll just give us a book? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, you, yeah, you have my card. So. You're a generous guy. And if you have a blog and you want to review the book, I'll send you an e-format. Pete, you got my stuff in, or you want one?
I'd like one.
And I just have
to see who designed this. Holy crap.
It's genius. It's
beautiful.
You might know why.
Rounded corners. Yeah, very, very 2.0.
Yeah, that's great. It's stylized his picture.
Yeah, I actually brought 5 different business cards. If you want to see the way that business cards can really iterate themselves.
Did Mike design all of them?
No, Michael only designed the best one.
He's the master of iteration, so.
So.
Did you start off with
that? Is that your high school picture? What is
no.
that?
No. Although it's very close.
That was based on. I did this one, yeah. Did you start off with the picture?
Yes. But I used that as a base, it's actually very much the same cut.
So it's based on.
On the boring word card.
And it's based
on. Oh, it's so boring.
It's really nice.
I'm bored.
Yeah, and they turned out really well. Sort of like these
It's good. Yes. So we'll pass them on. If you want to look, the fronts have the gloss orange. Which had done a little micro.
So does your customer service team feel as enthusiastic as you do?
Some days.
I wish I could get my team to be that enthusiastic.
Yeah.
Well, maybe tell them these types of stories. Because the humor really brings it out. Humor of failure.
It's hard when you yell at them.
Well, you know what? You don't have to yell at them, though.
No, I don't. I don't yell at them.
No, but you know what I mean? No, I mean, well, and that's the thing.
It's the only way you survive.
Yeah.
Contact support. It's by giggling.
Yes. We laugh.
And telling mean stories, but I try to avoid that.
Good to be out here by 8:30.
Pete, you got 10 minutes.
Oh, crap. No, I'm not doing anything.
You're not doing anything?
No.
Pete?
I'm not doing anything.
Man, you
Ashley's doing something, right?
Ashley, you're up.
Sure. Mine is more a round table thing. I talked to John a couple months ago about demographics and how important they are in anything that's really being presented to the public. And a specific example that I just told that I actually interviewed at a company down in Hales Corners, a programming house, and they produce software for like nutritionists for nursing homes. And the majority of the people who are using these programs are elderly women, so they're like 65 to 85, I want to say, year old women, and they're like taking me through their programs, and they're, you know, telling me about the customer base. And he's like, well, for this, you have to control double click. I said, do your customers know you have to control double click? He said, you know, that's, he didn't say anywhere on there, and it's not really something, you know, that just by seeing this, you'd be like, oh, yeah, control double click. And they just all looked at me dumbfounded, like, why would you ask them? Of course, then we know how to do it. Why would they not know how to do it? I'm like,
65,
cool. I'm like, I don't know. I have worked with my grandparents over the phone trying to get them to double click at a normal speed.
Yeah, it's just normal.
You know,
double
click like twice. Okay, not click twice. Click twice really fast. And just a little passion. They're like, it's just highlighting. Okay, I understand, but you have to do it really. And it's hard to explain it to someone who that interface might be completely boring. And it just baffled me that they would not take into consideration the people who they were building this program for. And they never did any, they never sat down with their customers to watch them, you know, navigate through their software. They don't have any, what's that?
Do they even have a help file?
They don't. And they don't have, they don't have an owner's manual or anything. I said, how do your customers know how to do this? They're like, oh, we have, you know, customer service. And they call in. I said, so to use the entire program, someone has to, it was a meeting room, you had like a tour or like, you know, flash video or like, you know, this is how you do the basics, nothing. Like, that is awesome. Like, if I had to tell my customers, like, my customer base are, at the job that I have, are mostly 20 to 30 something year old women who work in nail salons, beauty salons, and day spas. And if I have to tell them something like that that would be completely foreign to them, they would hang up and call back and see if they could get someone else. So if you don't provide them any instructions or, you know, any, how is it kind of what you guys use or, you know, how you gauge, you know, who your customers are, other than actually knowing the customers themselves, you know, how you design.
Yeah, control double click is very, that's fantastic.
That's impossible.
It's actually the left right.
My strategy is to talk to them as frequently as you can. Every little feature tweak you make that you think that you enjoy the look at that, you're going to ask them if it's okay. And sometimes they'll be like, yeah, are you going to do that for everything? Or, yeah, do that for this thing. Or, shut the hell up and get rid of that.
Your client, or you're talking to their client?
My clients change every week to who I'm designing for.
Okay.
So I designed a website 1 week for, like, 2 weeks ago I was designing it for a property rental group, primarily of students from UWM. The next week I was designing it for a dentist who was going to be using his computer standing all the time and wanted to just click real quick and get out. And then next week I'm working for a harness maker. So my world changed weekly. And so it's important to talk to them as often as I can during the week, especially since I usually have them for such a short window because we're based on turning around and getting your small things quickly. Mm-hmm. And so I found that just for them to understand, they need to talk to me briefly.
Right.
Do you have any kind of budget available or time available to bring them in or something and then observe them up over their place of where they use the tool and see how it's used in the environment?
My biggest issue, I think, is I talk a lot to my clients. I don't talk enough to their clients, who really are the people that, you know, I'm supposed to be doing the work for, you know, the people who are going to be interacting with my client's company. And I think, I mean, not knowing the company well enough is a problem. If they don't know what they are or, you know, what they represent or who their client base is, it's very hard, you know, for me to be able to, you know, set things up so I, you know that their users won't have a problem. You know,
how would you describe your structure? I'm kind of curious how do you relate to your, it's not that you have customers, you have then have customers.
Well, I mean, if you're designing a website, I mean, your client is the owner of the website, but their clients are really the people, you know. So, I mean, a lot of people, especially if it's their first website or, you know, if this is their first serious attempt at a website, they have no idea what they want. They don't know what their users need.
They know who their customers are, though. And if you can pull up some case studies, like they know that their target demographic is the 50 to 60-year-olds. I mean, you can do some use cases on that and look that up without knowing specifically who their customers are. I mean, Gartner's got research. People who blog do tons of research on that, you know. Finding out, you know, really making them get clear, and often that'll be in their marketing plan on who their target demographic is and who their sales were to. I mean, even if the people who buy, and the other thing though to realize is the people who buy online might not be the people who buy offline.
Right.
Right. So it might be somebody totally different. So you might want to do an industry comparable, see who their, you know, who that is. I mean,
is the problem getting the awareness of the need for audience awareness or audience analysis to the designers? Is that the problem? Because that's what it sounds like. Because, I mean, the control double click is pretty obscure.
Right.
The designers, are they aware that these people, I mean, 80 years, they grew up well into their adulthood without ever using a computer?
Right.
Is the awareness of the need for audience analysis to the designers? Do the designers have that?
I don't think that they did. I don't think that it was put enough on them that they should be designing for the clients and not designing because it has to be done, kind of thing. As you know, this is just another project, which would be my concern. I don't know. Like every project is something different, you know. And
I would worry about the training of the designers in this case. Mm-hmm. Like, how are they getting that awareness of the need to work for that?
But I mean, if you're working, you know, in this particular instance, if you're, they're a program house that's separate from their actual main headquarters. And the headquarters is who talks to the customers. So the programmers talk to the headquarters. So they're hearing everything secondhand. They never really interact.
Do you have a feedback loop into that process?
I don't know. I just happened to interview this lady.
Okay.
I just baffled me. It
sounds like, I mean, one way that you could maybe do it is whoever's at the front line could be very diligent about getting information and then writing the specifications, understanding who the people are that they're serving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then also be the one who's providing the feedback to the programming house. Like, they do this, you know, double shift, double click, and you can kind of think of another way. This is unacceptable.
Well, see, people in their 20s now grew up with this stuff and grew up with using a computer. But I remember in college, one of my professors didn't know how to use a mouse. This was a little issue a while back, you know.
And it's fearful. It could be a fearful thing.
But yet, on the other hand, there's 20-year-olds who have no clue that mice, you know, computers never existed. I mean, it wasn't too long ago.
Right, a lot of people don't know how to navigate out.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's a kind of common problem, though, is sort of people seeing everything from their perspective. It's very difficult to step outside yourself and see it from others. And that's why I asked, is there any opportunity, if there's an opportunity where you can, and I've heard this too, not just to ask people what they think, but to observe them using your whatever. In the case of software, it's maybe critical, but it's something I live with every day, right? So you actually watch what they do, because they'll say one thing. When you give opinions, you know, you say the things you do, but in reality, you don't do the things that you say that you do. You do something else. You just do that because you want to look good, you know, because image is important.
To please the interviewer.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to observe someone using it, after a while, they kind of forget you're there, and then they start acting normally, and then you see, you know, why did they just do that? I've had that happen where I've helped face with the design firm and do support, and I would watch designers like, what are you doing there? And like, why did you go about it that way? And it was really like a much more complex way than they needed to, because that's just the way they figured out how to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I was able to say, well, you know, that you could just, if you do this key and that key, you'll do the same thing. You won't have to use the mouse. Now, they may not ever change that, but they may then also, that might cut the functions off.
Was there a control double click?
it was
control alt double click.
Yeah, years ago we did user testing. We set up a video camera and basically bring someone in, camera behind them, showing them the screen, and we'd ask them to do certain tasks and say, you know, please, you know, think out loud while you're doing it. So we'd say, like, look up someone's name in the employee directory. So, you know, they'd be like, okay, I guess I'm gonna click on, you know, whatever, and they'd do it and kind of say it at once. And we just kind of get a feel for, you know, how quickly they get the lay of the land of a site, and how fast they could do things or find things, and where they get stuck and get lost. It's kind of interesting, but I just feel like those things aren't really done anymore, and I don't know, because everyone just assumes everyone knows how to figure things out nowadays, or there's just not the budgets to do it, people just don't care. I don't know.
Yeah, if you're not a Fortune 500 company, you're not
right.
A lot of companies that work with.
Yeah.
Like, I think when I had my presentation about the website design, like, it might have been Jordan or Ashley asked, like, did you do, like, you asked me, did you do user research? Like, I don't have any budget for user research.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm thinking, like, the last time we did a big one like that was for this company Intranet, you know, if a company with, you know, bring up 12,000 employees using this thing on a daily basis. You know, let's get it right. Because I think that's going to slow, you know, if it takes someone 5 minutes to do something, multiply that times 12,000 people per day, it's like, oh my God, we're going to lose productivity, like, you know, it's disastrous. So they said, let's do it and do it right and take the time to do it right. But again, this was like, you know, 8-9 years ago.
That might be a challenge with Web 2.0 kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The people that develop for those tools assume that everybody thinks the way
there's a huge assumption about
the right.
Testing.
Whereas user interface design in courses and such that I took in college emphasized audience interaction and analysis so much that it's part of the way I think about any design process, whether it's software or the interface. And I'm not sure why that would break down. I hope with Web 2.0 that isn't just, hey, we're all cyber dudes now. We know exactly how things are laid out. We have a mindset. I'm very worried about that because not everyone does that.
That's the mindset. Accepting a lot of feedback. Take your feedback seriously.
And make sure it's available. Like Phil said, I mean, I've had problems with sites where the feedback form doesn't work. That technology is not rocket science. It's a simple feedback form.
Or you have to Google their email address.
That's true.
Yes, that is
right.
And you give up. I've given up at other places. It didn't work.
Now, the other thing, the other side of that is if people sort of adapt themselves to the system like you were talking about, you can now understand why when you mess around with the way things are, design something, people get really angry because they have sort of spent all this effort figuring out how the old crappy website works and now you've made it beautiful and now they've got to refigure that all out. They get really angry.
Yeah, well, I know years ago when Jacob Nielsen was still, people still listen to him, usability guy, one of his things I think he said was, make your site different, stand out, but don't make it too different from everything else out there because people have a familiarity with how things work. Underlying text, I can click on that. So, if you're going to say, well, we don't want any underlying text on our site, it's all going to be bold and green. But, 90% of the web works this way, we're going to do it this way. Well, expect confusion then because that's how things work, if a book works by opening it like this and flipping the pages and you make one where you have to, hold something over your hand and then, it's just the familiarity of how things work.
That's a basic design principle. Yeah. I mean, that's fundamental. Are people not getting these fundamentals?
I was just curious as to, I take them into consideration when I do things.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering what things other people did.
Yeah, you asked about demographics and how do you analyze the audience. The reason I talked to you about this is you asked that question of me when I did my presentation, and you asked that about Mike. About demographics, it's very important to understand the demographics of your site because just as we had today, this relationship to the user is so key. And if you can make that easy, you delight them, so come back. If it breaks, it might happen.
A lot of good work has been done in developing personas of users. And that's really what designers need to do from the beginning is figure out who it is that they're designing this piece of code for.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think it's very hard to step out of what you know.
Oh, sure.
And to be I can't imagine not ever knowing that, right click does, or control C.
If you teach a class, because when I taught the Unix class, to help people use a Unix shell, these refreshments, they had never had a shell command line interface. They would always use a windowing system. So they were baffled about what the concept of the shell was, and even just typing a command, and I would sit in to help them, and they would do the wackiest things that I could never imagine, because they never saw a shell. So spend some time teaching. Or spend time with the end users and watch them, videotape them. Teaching a class of older people or younger people, you just understand how people misunderstand things. Because it's amazing how they misunderstand.
Look, it's so bizarre. You're trying to make rational sense of it. When I teach music, I'm starting to see a pattern of mistakes that students will make, and I see how they make them, and I see how they rationalize that, because that's the best sense they could make, given those circumstances.
Do you anticipate that pattern and integrate it into your teaching?
Yep. But and some of it's developmental, and some of it's, they're going to do that anyway. Some kids are so hard-headed that
you
need to let them do that first.
There's no way you can tell them they've accepted, they have to kind of go through the painful way.
Sometimes.
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 Well, Jeremy says we need to get out of here pretty soon.
Yeah.
So thanks to Phil for coming and speaking. Thanks, Jeremy, for giving us a stage.
I have a couple things.
Yes, good.
Okay, starting tomorrow, there's the Journal Sentinel blogging conference. Pete, if you want to say
that. Oh, wait, Journal Sentinel.
Or not Journal Sentinel, same company, yeah. WTMJ.
Yeah, oh, okay. Who wants to explain it? You want to explain it?
I guess what's the... I think it's the... Is it a Milwaukee Blogging Summit? I've already forgotten.
Citizens Blogging Summit. I got an email from some guy.
Sean Hackbarth.
Yeah, theamericanmind.com saying, like, hey, do you want to be involved in this blogging summit thing? I'm like, sure.
Is it on the radio? Or?
I still, it's really weird. We didn't get a lot of details. Like, I forgot about it until this weekend.
Where are you going?
It's at the TMJ Studios.
Yeah, I'm in the city.
Yeah, Mike and I were both asked, I guess, independently, probably because of Phil. so, but it seems to be extremely focused on politics and blogging, but we're like the non-political part of it
for someone who is not political.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. The question, he said, do you know any non-political, not business,
right,
non-political bloggers, which would be you and Mike and Jason Kotecki from KimandJason.com.
So anyway, they're doing three panels. We're on the second one that's non-political. The other two are political in some way.
Like, I call this we're like the palate cleanser for the... Is it a regular show that they're being on? Or
I think they're recording it.
Ever.
Are they recording it?
Yeah,
then?
I imagine so.
Yeah.
So it's probably going to be on their website.
Yeah,
I've heard it's going to be a podcast.
We need a link.
Charlie Sykes was selected. There's you and everyone.
We both did posts on it in our blog. So.
I actually heard about it because I read someone's
one of us.
Okay.
I read Pete Post on their plan. And it's at a time where I'm going to get books.
Yeah, there's a lot of people complaining. It's like the middle of the day. You know, it's like,
well. Well, I don't think they're going to broadcast it because I heard this week that they're doing the Lakefront Festival of the Arts stuff. So I think it's like pretty low priority.
Yeah.
Like if it goes bad, you know, they can just sort of like hide it somewhere.
Oh, yeah, they want to be able to hide that.
Yeah, but they're not promoting it super high. Well, anyway. But
so that's
the reason I had the same thing. Sean contacted me and said, hey, it sounds great. I sort of told him what I did. And I forgot about it. And then
well, he didn't really follow up the details.
This goes back to Relations Geek stuff.
Yeah.
I had these searches running like through Google blog search and a bunch of other services where I put in like my website name, my name. Anytime my name pops up, I see it. Well, this guy popped up and I didn't recognize him. He was talking about this blogging summit about how there weren't enough progressive bloggers.
Nick Schweitzer, yeah.
And so I was like, I went there and I was like, hey, that's my name. I'm on the panel.
Yeah.
Why did this dude not call me back?
I was like, I don't know, I'm pretty busy, so I'm going to go. And
Tuesday,
then I'm like, oh, God, my name's on. I better go.
Yeah, on Tuesday, I was like,
I ruined my brand otherwise, you know?
Been good to, like, tell me that I was on the panel.
Yeah.
More than a week
So, well, it's like, I guess we got to go, yeah.
So I quickly, like, you know, emailed him, and he sort of wrote back, and so I guess we're on.
Sure.
Is this still happening?
Yes. Yeah, we'll find a link to the podcast.
Yeah, post.
So that's, tomorrow.
We're not really sure what we're going to talk about.
I have no idea.
You go, guys.
So, but, and besides that, we didn't get an intro from our friend at the end here. I'm going to tell who you are and what you do and why you came here.
That's your last time.
Okay.
Jason. I'm more like a design, trying to learn web stuff.
All right. Yeah, you were here before. Okay, I'm sorry.
Coming up next, then, after that is, I think it'll be a weekend after this one. Is BarCamp Chicago already?
Oh,
all right.
No way!
Yeah, like the 23rd.
I think so.
22nd, 23rd,
I can't go.
Like
I'm getting married or something, so.
Oh, I'm going to be in D.C.
So are we going to do another
BarCamp? Well, yeah, we're talking about Milwaukee. We'd like to do it at Buckworks. They're moving, though, so that has to
go. So do it
right
before they move. Do it in August.
No, they're moving June 30th.
Are they
supposed to?
I thought they're not out to look.
I don't know. I've been.
They're at least expired at one point. They want to move before that.
But if you want to see it happen, get involved and make it happen. Because
you can always
have
it here. This building's free on the weekend. But you just can't stay overnight.
We could do. I don't know. Anything else you have?
Okay. And so that's one weekend. Then the following weekend is Summerfest, and I'm throwing a party every day but one of that week. You're all welcome to come over. And there'll be all kinds of stuff going on. And I'll make sure to throw that up on the Facebook thing for our next event. Okay.
In case you don't know, there's a web forum for, we usually post the events on Facebook.
Upcoming Facebook.
Upcoming, there's a group on upcoming, I think. You know,
yeah,
feel free to put it wherever.
We should do Eventful too.
Yeah, we should. I always forget about Eventful. So.
I just found it, so I can push
that. I think they actually syndicate their stuff out too, so it's kind of nice to put it in Eventful because they have an open database that goes
on. Is it only on Facebook?
No. It's, we put it there too. We kind of spread it around. Spread the love.
We have pretty good numbers on
Facebook. And then for next month, anybody want to present? Know someone who wants to present or talk? Or,
I think Jordan wants
to come?
Do. If he doesn't break anything else. I think that he wants to talk about his data security stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'll talk about Camtasia.
Camtasia, oh yes.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing it, but I've spent
Camtasia,
a lot of time.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I've spent an excessive amount of time with it the past week.
All right.
Did anyone need to make it to the barcamp?
You show off your camera too.
I'll probably be there. Better by bus.
And represent us?
This will be our first barcamp.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
Barcamp bubble is being burst.
Wow.
Hey, I got one final announcement. The guy I used to work for runs a design firm, has like 4 LaCie standalone FireWire hard drives. I think 3 are 250 gigs and one is a 200 gig, selling for like $50 for the 250 gigs and $40 for the
FireWire USB.
I think they're FireWire. I don't know if they're USB. I'll have to contact them. I'm pretty sure they're FireWire for the because they're Macs. But they may have a dual.
Why would someone be selling this?
Because
he always needs storage.
He's getting bigger ones.
Okay.
They're a design firm, so they're probably too small.
Yes.
So he's got a bunch of these. If you want one, let me know.
Maybe. Okay.
We have the USB.
We can use USB.
I can check that.
Yeah.
Right? We can do
yes.
that.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have dual interface, but often the old ones are just FireWire.
Yeah.
They were cheaper that way. So I'll figure out what that is.
They shouldn't say that about us.
What? What are they saying about us?
They said we can't use
Who it. Said that?
No, he said the drive.
Oh.
Not
okay.
you.
He uses a Mac.
Yeah. Some of the old ones just had FireWire, so if you're a PC or a host, yeah.
Well, I have a FireWire.
Yeah, some PCs have it, some don't, sort of.
Oh, I got a new Mac. I figured
Yay.
That out.
Yay.
Yeah.
You got it?
Yeah, I got it.
Cool.
Logic board died in my own. I assume it's logic board.
I read your stuff.
So, yeah. All right, we'll go.